Welcome to Stu Does America. We're going to get started here in just a second. But first, I'm going to tell you about My Patriot Supply. What if your food supply lasted forever? This isn't some pipe dream. An endless food supply does exist. And when grocery store shelves are wiped clean after the next national emergency, you're going to need that fail-proof food because you can access it, well, when? How? How are you going to access this? Your food at the grocery store is not guaranteed to you, but you can declare your food independence at preparewithstew.com. You can pick up your continuous food supply packed inside survival seed vaults from My Patriot Supply, helping millions of American families prepare since 2008. My Patriot Supply is equipped to help you reach self-reliance. The survival seed vault from Patriot Seeds is a never-ending source of fresh fruits and vegetables. These 20 varieties of zone-friendly 100% heirloom seeds are triple sealed to protect them against the elements. Plant them right away or wait up to 5 years or more. Grow, harvest, replant fresh, delicious beans, greens, tomatoes, melons, and more at preparewithstew.com. Get your survival seed vault and start planting a food supply that never stops. Preparewithstew.com. Preparewithstew.com. It's all from My Patriot Supply.
Stu Does America.
Ah, yes. New t-shirts are in. New t-shirts are in. Joe Biden, elderly man with a poor memory. Yes, the slogan that defines an election. Be sure to grab a t-shirt like this or maybe a mug like this. They've got the slogan on it. You're going to love it. StuDoesMerch.com. The code is Stu10. StuDoesMerch.com. The code is Stu10. You get 10% off. Be sure to check out the show on YouTube as well. YouTube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Be sure to like and comment on our videos and hit the bell for notifications. Dan Andros is going to be here to talk about a bunch of stuff. Sexism in basketball. Another false Me Too allegation. But we're going to start by doing the NPR implosion. What a fascinating story this is. And it all starts a few weeks ago. I mean, these things, it feels like a decade ago now. The news moves so fast. But Yuri Berliner is the guy's name. He's been at NPR for 25 years. Here's how we lost America's trust. That is the headline of his story. Came out April 9th of 2024 in the Free Press. That's the website run by Barry Weiss. And they've done a lot of really good work, especially in this realm, like recognizing and finding these stories and people who are in these organizations and will come out and say, yes, hey, look, things have changed. I love this organization. I love NPR, but there's been big issues here. Now, the thing that's interesting about Yuri Berliner is he does this at a time he actually works at NPR. This is not a former employee. It's not someone who got fired. It's not someone who decided to leave because they couldn't take it anymore. It was someone who was still inside the building, still working at NPR. He writes, persistent rumors that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia over the election became the catnip that drove reporting. At NPR, we hitched our wagon to Trump's most visible antagonist, Representative Adam Schiff. The Schiff talking points became the drumbeat of NPR news reports. But when the Mueller report found no credible evidence of collusion, NPR's coverage was notably sparse. Russiagate quietly faded from our programming. So, I mean, this was clear to anyone who listened to NPR at the time or name the media source. They blew up Russiagate into something that was bigger than it was. It wound up being a big letdown, and then they just kind of let that drift away after the fact. Then you have the laptop. This one's fascinating. The laptop did belong to Hunter Biden. Its contents revealed his connection to the corrupt world of multi-million dollar influence peddling and its possible implications for his father. The laptop was newsworthy, but the timeless journalistic instinct of following a hot story lead was being squelched. During a meeting with colleagues, I listened as one of NPR's best and most fair-minded journalists said it was good we weren't following the laptop story because it could help Trump. I mean, that is, of course, what we all suspected was happening, but to hear it from the inside is amazing. And look, I think it's honestly understandable to have a little bit of skepticism about the Hunter Biden laptop story. The idea that the president's son was so high on crack that he left his laptop with all the sex pictures and drug pictures and illegal emails and text messages about business dealings at a computer repair shop owned by a blind guy that somehow got into the hands of Rudy Giuliani like a week before the election. Look, I can understand having a little bit of skepticism on that story. However, considering the fact that it was brought to light by the nation's oldest newspaper. I don't know. Maybe it's treated skeptically, but fairly, seriously. I mean, NPR was tweeting out, they were mocking people who thought they should be covering it at the time. Snarky on Twitter, going after people. And then, of course, they look like complete buffoons because it turns out to be true. Yuri Berliner continues, over the course of the pandemic, a number of investigative journalists made compelling, if not conclusive, cases for the lab leak. But at NPR, we weren't about to swivel or even tiptoe away from the insistence with which we backed the national origin story. We didn't budge when the Energy Department, the federal agency with the most expertise about laboratories and biological research, concluded, albeit with low confidence, that a lab leak was the most likely explanation for the emergence of the virus. Instead, we introduced our coverage of that development on February 28th, 2023, by asserting confidently that the scientific evidence overwhelmingly points to a natural origin for the virus. Now, look, this is something that is obviously hard to come to a firm conclusion on. We've covered this many, many times. We've talked to authors who've written entire books on the topic. It's not easy to pinpoint exactly what happened, of course, but the overwhelming amount of evidence, any sensible person looks at the stuff and says, okay, most likely this came from a lab. I mean, that's just the facts of the matter. If you were watching a Netflix true crime documentary, that would be the way you were leaning. You wouldn't necessarily know for sure, but that's certainly the way you'd be leaning. NPR went the opposite direction and, again, mocked people who believed the opposite. And then, of course, just the overview. In essence, this means the NPR union, of which I am a dues-paying member, has ensured that advocacy groups are given a seat at the table in determining the terms and vocabulary of our news coverage. Conflicts between workers and bosses, between labor and management, are common in workplaces. NPR has had its share, but what's notable is the extent to which people at every level of NPR have comfortably coalesced around the progressive worldview. And this, I believe, is the most damaging development at NPR, the absence of viewpoint diversity. Now, anyone who has paid any attention to NPR would know all of these things just from an outsider's perspective if they were going to be honest. To confirm them from inside is incredibly powerful, but this is not going to surprise you that NPR is far left. And you think, okay, well, look, it's journalism. We have the ombudsman tradition here. One person calling them out is not going to make the entire organization fall apart. They should look at this. They should say, hey, here's what we have. Here's what we know. Let's look at these claims individually, take some time, do an investigation, whatever you want to do. Maybe admit that you made a couple of mistakes and we're not perfect. We're going to try to do better in the future. We thank Yuri Berliner for bringing these things to our attention, blah, 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 blah. There's an easy way to handle this. And this is how they did handle it. NPR suspends editor whose essay criticized the broadcaster. Yuri Berliner, a senior business editor at NPR, said the public radio network's liberal bias has tainted his coverage of important stories. So they just threw him out and suspended him. Now, it's not a surprise. In fact, it only proves the point of Yuri Berliner. But here's what they say in the New York Times. NPR has suspended Yuri Berliner, the senior business editor who broke ranks and published an essay arguing that the nonprofit radio network has allowed liberal bias to affect its coverage. Mr. Berliner was suspended by the network for 5 days, starting Friday, for violating the network's policy against doing work outside the organization without first getting permission. Now, what a sham suspension that is. They're not suspending him because he worked with the Free Press. Hey, you're under contract with us. We can't believe you go and work with them. Like, you know, here even at The Blaze, I haven't seen everyone's contract, but many of the contracts have a clause in there that basically says, you know, you can't just go on and you can't just do work for other networks. You can't just go and like do a bunch of work over there. You can't go on all their shows without getting approval. And that's like a traditional standard media clause. Now, it's very rarely enforced. It's only enforced if you're doing something incredibly egregious. Like if I started doing a daily talk show for the Daily Wire, they'd say, hey, you can't do that, right? Like that's not okay. But if I went on the Daily Wire, even probably as like a weekly guest, or I go on with Megyn Kelly often. She's not part of this network, but I go on Megyn Kelly. They don't care. They're happy about that. They want me to go out there and get the word out about the show. It's a good way to spread the word and spread the word of the values that we favor here at The Blaze. And and it's a good way to get your name out there. Of course, you do that all the time. That's part of my job, is to go out and promote the show on other channels. Now, this is, in some ways, certainly drew a lot of attention to NPR. I don't know if it's the type of attention they wanted, but apparently they exercised this BS clause to suspend him. Now, after Mr. Berliner's essay was published, NPR's new chief executive, Catherine Maher, remember this name, came under renewed scrutiny as conservative activists resurfaced a series of years-old social media posts criticizing former President Donald Trump and embracing progressive causes. Again, this is a version of the conservatives' pounce line. It's not controversial that she made these tweets. It's controversial that we resurfaced them, I guess is the way the news works now, at least at the New York Times. NPR said on Monday that Mr. Maher's social media posts were written long before she was named chief executive of NPR. Now, obviously, that's true. Many of these came from a few years ago. But the point is not that they were written years ago and she's changed her mind, is now fair. She still believes all the same crap that she believed then. The point is that obviously now as the CEO of this company, she's not going to blurt out all the crazy things that she believes. We just found the things that she believed before she became a CEO. You'd think if you're a member of a media organization, you're going to want to be fair-minded, right? No. If you can lead a media organization like this that's supposed to be nonprofit, nonpartisan, and you can believe the craziest liberal things in the world. And I want to give you the craziest progressive stuff that she believes in just a minute. They went on. They said she was not working for the news industry at the time. That's of no value. Of no value. Yes, she made these things when she was not working in the news industry. So what? It still tells us who she is and what she believes. NPR also said that while she managed the business side of the nonprofit, she was not involved in the editorial process. Ms. Maher said in a statement that in America, everyone is entitled to free speech as a private citizen. Did you realize you just suspended a guy who actually went to a place called the Free Press and you suspended him for doing that? Bull crap, you suspended him because of some dumb contractual thing. You suspended him because he criticized you. You suspended him because he made your life miserable, because people started looking at your background after he told the truth about your media organization. That's why you suspended him. Just be honest about it, own it. Look, I mean, look, if he was working at MSNBC and he did this, I would hope MSNBC would come out and say, look, we're a bunch of liberals. We don't want people necessarily to know that. We want to be overt about it. We're annoyed that he told everybody. He's kind of undercutting our vision of fairness that we keep telling people. So we're getting rid of him because he's annoying us. Like, that's actually what happens. And maybe someone like MSNBC or the Huffington Post would actually just be honest about it and just say those things. But NPR chose not to. Now, the CEO is now under fire and trying to push back. Why is she so upset? All people did was repost her public posts. That's it. This is the same thing when you complain about the libs of TikTok account. It's like, oh, I can't believe they're doing this. These people are giving more attention to the people who are trying to get attention online. That's what you seemingly wanted. But Trump hating Biden and BLM supporting NPR CEO pushes back against woke allegations. And the post-millennial went through a bunch of the tweets. We found some as well. They're really just bonkers. So let me go through. Like, this is not like someone who said, you know what? I prefer slightly higher taxes because I want to support a larger welfare state for those in need. That's not the liberalism we're talking about. It's the kind of crazy kind, the AOC version of liberalism, or really progressivism. Catherine Maher writes, lots of jokes about leaving the U.S., and I get it, but as someone with cis white mobility privilege, only white people are allowed to move around, I don't understand, white mobility privilege, I'm thinking I'm staying and investing and ridding ourselves of the specter of tyranny. Now, the tyranny she was talking about that time, I guess, was Trump related, right? Because Trump was president at this time. But if anything was going on that was tyrannical at the time, it was the COVID lockdowns. And at that point, Trump had even basically bailed on them. I mean, you know, he obviously started them. He was the guy saying 15 days. He was on stage, as Fauci said, 15 days to slow the spread. He's the one that helped extend that and announced the extension of that. But, you know, after a couple of months, he was more like, hey, by Easter, we should kind of be open again. That was not the case with liberals. Liberals were the ones locking these communities down. Places like Texas, I mean, I was already at that point, that was June, I think, 2020, July 2020. We were already like indoor dining at that point all over Texas for a few months. That was a world where the tyranny I remember being the tyranny of blue states locking down their own people. Catherine Marr also, on July 30th, 2020, followed that up with, "That said, I know of a lot of people who have neither mobility nor physical safety in our current systems. For those who need to seek safety elsewhere, of course. For those who can't, we must center their rights and safety." This is around the George Floyd stuff. So the tyranny we're talking about is not allowing them to burn enough stuff to the ground. I don't know, something like that. Christopher Rufo responded, said, "New NPR CEO, as someone with cis mobility privilege, Elon Musk says this person is a crazy racist." And of course, when you think about yourself with the color of your skin and how much privilege you have for being white, isn't that a little untoward? I mean, I don't understand this viewpoint. I don't understand thinking about race all the time, but Catherine Maher certainly does. There was a collage that was put out on Twitter as well. And a lot of it is run-of-the-mill Hillary supporting and Biden supporting nonsense. But this one I love. "I do wish Hillary wouldn't use the language of boy and girl. It's erasing language for non-binary people." That is like as bonkers as you can possibly get. You can't say boy and girl because of the effects on non-binary people. Like, that's like a cartoon character. People were comparing her to, Titania McGrath, the fake crazy liberal person. And she kind of, number one, looks like her. And number two, sounds like her. Like, that is absolutely nutty, right? Crazy. Crazy talk. She also said CNN is talking about the tragedy of damage to iconic retail zones and shoe stores in LA. I mean, sure, looting is counterproductive, but it's hard to be mad about protests not prioritizing the private property of a system of oppression founded on treating people's ancestors as private property. Like, what kind of lunatic do you have to be to see America that way? That's a lunatic way to see America. Yes, we've had problems. Yes, there have been people, individuals, and groups who have been oppressed, particularly in the past. But to see the country and summarize it that way is someone who should not be in the leadership of forming the opinions of the American people. That person is crazy. Like, you want to work at some, you know, CRT think tank, I guess maybe you fit in. But this is a publicly funded news organization. It's insanity. And I'm sorry, someone who thinks of, hey, why should we think about private property? Why should we think about, capitalism in any positive way? Should you be the business head of a network? Like, it makes no sense at all. Christina Hoff Summers said the new CEO of NPR, Catherine Maher, excuses looting of retail stores because such stores are part of a system of oppression. You have to be pretty cut off from the real world to think like that, and it appears she is. And she posts the funding, the amount of money we're giving this woman to run this this network so poorly: $374,000 in 2018, $387,000 in 2019, 2020, $406,000, 2021. Nice little raise here, up to $789,000. Follow the trend, and we don't have any more details on her salary, but you're probably up over $800,000, $850,000 by now to run NPR. I mean, you got a bunch of basically free radio stations. You're getting money from the government. How hard can it be? And also, she is... if you think all those tweets are annoying, wait to hear her talk. Here she is doing a TED talk in the most condescending way humanly possible.
I think if I were to really ask you to think about this, one of the things that we could all acknowledge is that part of the reason we have such glorious chronicles to the human experience and all forms of culture is because we acknowledge there are many different truths.
Many different truths.
And so in the spirit of that, I'm certain that the truth exists for you.
God, who does she remember?
And probably for the person sitting next to you. But this may not be the same truth. This is because the truth of the matter is very often, for many people, what happens when we merge facts about the world with our beliefs about the world. So we all have different truths. They're based on things like where we come from, how we were raised, and how other people perceive us.
Oh my God, she's Emma Stone from The Curse. That's who she is. If you have not seen The Curse, you've not seen Emma Stone in The Curse, 100%. First, she looks like her, but she's exactly the character, who's a crazy, annoying liberal with these same bonkers opinions. Like, I wonder if they based that character off of her after seeing that. It just hit me as we were watching it. I'm sorry. I'm flabbergasted. Okay. So what happened? How did this end up? You're going to be shocked to hear. NPR President CEO Catherine Marr, thoughts on our mission and our work. She writes, asking a question about whether we're living up to our mission. Should always be fair game. After all, journalism is nothing if not hard questions. Doesn't seem like a cat. Questioning whether our people are serving our mission with integrity based on little more than the recognition of their identity is profoundly disrespectful, hurtful, and demeaning. He gave multiple examples of how the reporting sucked. He didn't say anything about identity. He wasn't like, well, I don't like the black people who work here. That wasn't what he did. He said, hey, our reporting sucks because we're crazy liberals. And not just because we identify as liberals, but because our reporting is false. She went on, it's deeply simplistic to assert that the diversity of America can be reduced to any particular set of beliefs and faulty reasoning to infer that the identity is determinative of one's thoughts or political leanings. Each of our colleagues are here because they are excellent, accomplished professionals with an intense commitment to our work. We are stronger because of the work we do together, and we owe each other our utmost respect. We fulfill our mission best when we look and sound like the country we serve. There's no problem with having people who have different skin colors and genitals. That's fine. Who cares about that? Shouldn't care about it at all. But it's totally fine to have all sorts of different looks and hairstyles and whatever you want. The issue here is the one person who actually stood up for something that wasn't hardcore liberal you threw out of the building. That's the problem. Jonathan Turley writes, after the scathing account of bias at NPR from one of its most respected editors, Catherine Marr has responded and appeared to confirm the publicly supported media company has no intention to bring greater balance to its coverage for editorial staff. Marr responded to none of the specific points in substance. Instead, she attacked Berliner as profoundly disrespectful and demeaning to his colleagues by calling out the company for its political bias. Well, you know where this is going to end, right? Suspended. Where does this end? Well, they were going to bring him back in just a few days, right? Maybe not. Breaking NPR editor who claimed liberal bias quits. Says he doesn't support defunding. This is his statement. I am resigning from NPR, a great American institution where I've worked for 25 years. I don't support calls to defund NPR. I respect the integrity of my colleagues and wish for NPR to thrive and do important journalism. But I cannot work in a newsroom where I am disparaged by a new CEO whose divisive news views confirm the very problems at NPR I cite in my free press essay. Yeah, I mean, she just proved his point, right? Completely, 100% certainty. And like, I disagree with him. I think we should defund NPR. Certainly public funding should not go anywhere near a news organization. That's what happens in Europe. That shouldn't happen here at all. I disagree with him on that. And I don't really respect a lot of the work of the people who do there. There are some people who are very good at what they do and are good journalists, but they got to be terrified to say the truth. If this is how they're going to be treated, they're terrified of this. And we talk about all these institutions all the time, like the New York Times, and they are terrible. They do terrible, terrible work as well, though some do good work there as well. But the point here, this is like a publicly funded institution. This should go away. So I would disagree with him on his analysis. But the fact that just speaking out and saying something that's not even conservative, just like factually based, hey, let's not lie all the time. If that gets you thrown out of your building should no longer be filled with employees. It should go out of business. That's what should happen when you're doing this, especially when the punishment for speaking out is basically you're exiled from the entire industry. I've been telling you about Gen 90. This is the latest breakthrough in skincare from our friends at Genucell for a while now. And did you know that also it works on those annoying bags and puffiness under your eyes? And this happens instantly. You can instantly reduce the appearance of looking older anywhere you use it, around the eyes, the forehead, the crow's feet, laugh lines, even the chin. Never worry about your skin or your confidence again. Gen 90 technology is luxurious, paraben-free, silky smooth, and best of all, it starts working in seconds. And now get Genucell's classic under eye bags and puffiness serum with every Gen 90 order and their luxurious Genucell XV, his collagen builder moisturizer with vitamin C and hyaluronic acid as a pure natural base. You're going to love this stuff. It works for people all the time. Get stunning results day after day. You can go to Genucell.com right now for incredible packages, over 50% off during Genucell's spring sale. Results are guaranteed or your money back, so there's no risk here. Why not give it a shot? Genucell.com/stew. You can order right now and get a free limited edition spa box with bonus gifts and free shipping. The whole thing is a great gift if you got some present you need to buy coming up. It's GenuCell.com/stew, GenuCell.com/stew.
Well, today, the only other one, Darcy Adonna Asimonu, has been criminally indicted for committing felony fraud against me and another man. So now she's facing up to 16 years in prison. Her claims are even more absurd than Lindsay's were, so here's some of the details. We had one plain sexual encounter in December of 2020, nothing that could be considered remotely rough. She initiated it, but don't take my word for it, take hers. This is a picture and text message she sent me the next morning, explaining why she came on to me. And for months afterwards, she repeatedly requested to sleep with me again. For example, this text from January 7th, 2021. At one point, she even requested a sample of my sperm so she could have my child whenever she wanted to in the future. Now, it's hard to keep track, but she's made at least 4 7-figure demands over the last few years. More than a year after the one time we slept together, and only after Lindsay Hill made up her false allegations, Adonna retained a lawyer. She then demanded $3.6 million and claimed I forced her to have an abortion, leaving her emotionally devastated and irretrievably damaged by it. But here's the thing, she never had an abortion because she was never even pregnant, and that's corroborated by her own medical records. If any evidence of any of these claims actually existed, I would have been charged, or at the very least arrested, but that never happened. What else do I have to do to prove that this entire situation has been a massive lie? This is insane. At what point do I get to go back to work and continue earning a living?
An absolutely incredible story. That's Trevor Bauer, a former Major League pitcher, former Cy Young Award winning a Major League pitcher, who was accused by multiple women of sexual assault, and he's been held up now. Multiple women have come out, and the text messages have been leaked and shown now, as Bauer just pointed out, one woman has been charged with a crime. All this stuff seems to be now completely BS, and this guy's lost multiple years of his career. I'm joined now by Dan Andros. He's managing editor at CBN News and host of CBN's Quick Start podcast, which you should subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Dan, thanks for coming on. Trevor Bauer, I'm not going to defend. It certainly seemed like he was sleeping around quite a bit and doing things that some professional athletes do. However, we can't just destroy people with false allegations and not make it right. That seems to be what we're doing in here.
Yeah, I mean, it's two things can be true at the same time, right? This is not good. This is generally not good habits to be practicing of sleeping around. There's just all these risks inherently in them. And there's a lot of dangers. And it's just, as a Christian myself, these are the sorts of things that scripture tells us about. Hey, it's almost like if you follow these things, life is going to go better for you. So that's the first problem here, getting him into all this mess, is he's just kind of off the rails and enjoying the fruits of the flesh and just doing all of these things.
But isn't that, before you go on to your next point, isn't that lifestyle seemingly coming to a close? How can you even operate that way now? Maybe you could do that in the 60s and then free love. And I don't know, maybe there's a time where that thing was never, it was never morally right probably to do, but maybe you could get away with it in society. Yeah. You can now. People, you're a pro athlete with millions of dollars. You're gonna get a shakedown at some point.
Yeah, you are. And I think it's driving. I think this threat is driving. This is a whole nother problem. Is driving people into pornography use, and that's a whole nother set of issues that causes problems on society as a whole. But then the flip side of that coin, though, Stu, is that you can't. The Me Too product, the product of the Me Too sort of era, is this just, believe women. And then that's just encouraging them. You're encouraging bad actors here, right? Mm-hmm. If you're being told and you're even thinking I'm in an opportunity here, if they're going to have to believe me, well, you're incentivizing them to make these false claims. And so instead of just judging a case on the merits, call me old fashioned, if we just take a case, look at the facts, and judge it on that and not on some empty mantra like believe all women, which when you think about it is one of the dumbest phrases of all time. But that's
it is.
The society that we live in is going down more the dumbest of all time route than tried and true practices.
Right, and it's not because women are inherently untrustworthy. It's that people are inherently untrustworthy at times. People make mistakes. People lie. People do things they should not do. Let me go over to Jontay Porter. This is an NBA player. And now we have sort of this world of gambling, legalized gambling opening up. This is, we saw the Shohei Ohtani thing that was a big scandal. Now we're seeing this scandal. if you don't know who Jontay Porter is, he's kind of like a borderline NBA player, like not a superstar. Which was kind of what gave it away, because it's like the heaviest betting on these markets was on this one, like, ninth best guy on the Toronto Raptors. That's suspicious. And then in the game where everyone was betting under for, you know, lower points than he was supposed to have, he got sick and he left the game after a few minutes. So one guy bet $80,000 on him and was supposed to be paid $1.1 million. He wasn't paid off because the people were like, this is super suspicious. Long story short, he's now been suspended for life from the NBA. I mean, like, human beings fall to temptation all the time. And we are seeing lots and lots of examples of this recently.
Yeah, this sports thing is interesting because I think the sports world was reluctant at first to jump into the gambling stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they're kind of like, oh, well, all right, I guess it was, you know, Pete Rose is just like banned for all time, right? And like, he's still not in the Hall of Fame and in baseball. But with this advent of the gambling being, you know, legalized on all these fronts and then on the apps and in the popularity of it, they've just incorporated in the money that's flowing in from these places. They can't refuse it, right? These leagues are just like, well, I guess we'll do it. But there's so many possible problems with this, and you're seeing it here. I mean, the temptation, to me, it's remarkable because Porter's brother is actually a star in the NBA on the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah.
And he's making, I don't know what his salary is, I haven't looked, but I'm sure it's up there.
Like $20 million a year.
Yeah. Right, so you've got a very wealthy brother. He's probably doing all right. I mean, he's in and out of the NBA. He could probably make millions overseas if he wanted to. So the temptation for more money and greed is, obviously, it's something that even people with access to a high style life can't resist.
That's the downside of sports. Let me take a break, come back on the other side. We'll talk about the more positive side of sports. An interesting comment from Patrick Mahomes. That's coming up next. When you absolutely positively have to buy or sell a home, you need Real Estate Agents I Trust.com. This is Glenn Beck's company. He started it a long time ago because he was tired of dealing with incompetent real estate agents. I mean, probably everybody is, but Glenn, you know, Glenn gets more frustrated than most. If you want to buy a home, sometimes that can suck. That whole process is tough. You don't know what's going on. You don't understand the paperwork. And then you're kind of led down this road that is, you know, maybe not the best option. Time, you know, you might not get the best price. All these things are real problems. So what Real Estate Agents I Trust does is they just find the best agents in your area with the best records. They go through and screen these people. It's a long process. I wouldn't want to go through it myself because all the skeletons would be out there. Let's be honest about it. This kid's at Taco Bell every day. It's true. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. The name kind of says it all. Check it out now. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. Patrick Mahomes, you know, one of the biggest stars in the world of sports, came out with a statement. And what you're supposed to do in these statements is tell everyone why they should vote for Joe Biden. That's your supposed role. When you're asked about a political question, say how good the left-wing person is. That's not what he said, however. Kansas City Chiefs quarterback said he would like to see voters do their own research ahead of the elections. He did not provide any endorsement in the 2020 presidential election or 2024. I don't want to pressure anyone to vote for a certain president, Mahomes said. I want people to use their voice, whoever they believe in. I want them to do the research. I don't know, Dan, that seems like what you should say if you're an athlete. He's not pressuring people. He's just saying like, hey, you believe what you believe.
Yeah, it'd be nice if more of these celebrities realize that, and maybe this is hopefully a start of a positive trend that they're going to go in this direction and be like, I don't want anything to do with that. Now, I have to get your opinion on this, too, because I think this is one of two things for Patrick Mahomes. Either he's realizing that, like, this is really just a no-win, it's a lose-lose situation to get into politics because I automatically alienate half of my audience,
right,
which is the same position.
The old Michael Jordan, old Republicans buy sneakers,
right,
too.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. And he realizes, like, what? Why? Like, what do I need to do this for? So it's either that option or the other option is he's conservative and he just doesn't want to admit it.
Yeah, those are the two options.
Could
I
be
would
both
agree.
Of those, I guess. So.
It could be. Yeah, I mean, I think the one about I don't want to turn off half of the audience is definitely true. The other one is questionable. I don't know. He's a Texas guy, though. I mean, he's a Texas guy. He lives in Glenn's neighborhood.
Is he in Austin, Texas?
No, he's from here. Okay. Yeah, like he lives legitimately in Glenn's neighborhood.
And Glenn wouldn't know him from a hole in the wall.
Probably not. I don't know. He could be conservative. I have no idea, no information on that. But it is interesting to see him do this. And this used to be the way it always was, right? Seemed to be the obvious thing. Just like, you know, something to get in people's faces. You know, my daughter likes Taylor Swift. You know, she's a little bit of a Swiftie. And I know. And I'm talking to her about it. And like, you know, the one thing she doesn't like about Taylor Swift is that she, you know, likes Joe Biden. My daughter.
She's woke.
And I said to her, like, look, do you go to Taylor Swift for songs or do you go to her for political opinions? If you want to think about her outside of her music, just remember she's actually a Philadelphia Eagles fan, which is the only good thing about her. I think that's important. That's how we should look at people. You know, be fans of them for their work. If you like their music, you like their music. If you like, you know, the Chiefs, you like Patrick Mahomes. Whether he agrees with you on politics is not part of the equation.
Yeah. I mean, you've really set up a bad foundation if you're like, you know what? Taylor Swift really likes Joe Biden. Maybe I should, too.
Yeah.
Like, what about this whole think for yourself, you know, I am a tiger, hear me roar, you know, whatever. Like, where are all those thoughts when it comes to politics? I'm supposed to just go, oh, you think I'm just a robot that, like, because I like your musical abilities or I like the way you run around on a field and throw a ball, like, that I need to now vote the way you vote? Like, that's a terrible way to set up to think, right? Like, you have to train your children to think for themselves and not be so, pushed by the winds and the waves of any, you know, sort of idea that's floating out there that they just go along with it.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to train them up better than that.
That's why I'm always amazed. I remember driving around Pennsylvania back in the day, and they'd have all these political signs up, and they'd just be like, vote no on 8. It's like, well, what?
8. Get out of here, 8.
Come on, 8. I don't like the number 8 either. But like Proposition 8, whatever that is year. And it's like, oh, gosh, like if you don't even know what the proposition, if you don't even know what it means and you're being informed by a sign, you're an embarrassment. We're back with more with Dan Andrews here in just a second. Just like it was back during the days of the pandemic. Remember those days? You like, remember when you go to the store and they wouldn't have the thing that you needed? I got to tell you right now, I have a medication that and I've been trying to find it all over the place. Can't find it because there's just a shortage. There's over 200 drug shortages right now in this country. Why? Well, I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with our leadership. That's just me saying that. That's not Jace Case telling you that, but that's what I'm saying. Jace Medical is a great company. They are trying to help you through this. And they say, hey, it's not just food. It's also medicine. Medicine is really important. They provide 5 life-saving antibiotics in each Jace case. This is for emergency use. If you're traveling, if the supply chain is broken down, you kind of forget that antibiotics have come around. They've knocked out a lot of these illnesses that used to really do damage to people. So have a supply on hand, jacemedical.com. Enter the code STU at checkout. You'll get a discount on your order. The promo code is STU at jacemedical.com, JASEmedical.com. Back with Dan Andrews of CBN's Quick Start podcast. And actually, Dan, you've been doing a lot of coverage of the Israel situation on your YouTube channel. I wanted to talk to you about this because we're at this point now where we're in this like questionable period as to what Israel is going to do. Are they going to come back with this big response? Are they going to come back with a more modified response? Are they happy, quote unquote, taking the win as they knocked down all these missiles and drones and didn't really have any damage and obviously took out these targets in Syria? Netanyahu now brushing off calls for restraint. He says that Israel will decide how to respond to Iran's attack, apparently not allowing the media to have any voice whatsoever in how Israel responds to Iran. I mean, that's just disrespectful.
Right. I mean, they've got to be over it at this point. Right. But if CNN is to believe, they had a source that said that the U.S. expected Israel's response to be sort of minimal. Here you have Netanyahu there saying he said right after the attack that they were going to respond in a big way. So it's interesting that they're taking this much time. But remember, there was a lot of time before they went into Gaza as well. Like, you know, they really built up the military there and waited and waited and waited. And I remember we were waiting for this. They kept saying it was imminent. It was like days and days, a couple weeks go by. And then they go in and they absolutely flatten Gaza. So what will that look like in Iran? I don't know. I do think they're going to do something, I would think that they would do something strong. If not, I'd probably be a little bit surprised. But at least something that they would view as doing some serious damage, maybe some targets on maybe their nuclear facilities or whatever, things that they've done in the past, similar sorts of things. Because it was funny to me that when Iran launched these missiles and they go across and they're like, we consider the matter closed now.
Yeah, yeah.
We're like, that. We consider it all settled and done. And it's like, I bet you do. I'm sure you don't want a response now from Israel.
One of the things that bothers me a little bit about this, because like, I want there to be stability, right? Like my interests in this situation are different than Israel's. Israel, if I was Israeli, I'd be like, they just freaking fired all these missiles at us. We're going after them. I can understand that mindset. From my mindset, like, I just don't want things to go crazy. I don't want to be in World War III. They should absolutely respond. And of course, this is just going to continue if they don't do anything. It's a hard line for them to walk. But like, watching, you know, and trying to figure out what level of response that they're looking at here, to me, it seems like if they can do something that really does benefit them, not a show of force, but something that really benefits them, like the Syria attacks, they took out major leaders, and do that in a way that doesn't turn this into World War III, that would be great. Because one of the things that keeps eating at the back of my mind is, when you're Hamas and you do October 7th, this is what you want. You want a wide inflamed war. They weren't like they were taking territory on October 7th. They wanted this to get so bad that everyone was killing everybody and causing chaos in this region. And I don't want to give Hamas what they want.
Yeah. And they also want, death to Israel, right? Like, we've seen Iran say that. We've seen, obviously, Palestinians across that region say that. And it's what they're looking for there. And for the Biden administration to come out and sort of criticize Israel after Gaza and like their response there, and then now immediately saying, hey, whoa, slow it down. I think that they are incentivizing more assaults against Israel because if you're Iran, right, and you watch how the world responds to Israel on this and they say, you know what, Israel, will you knock it off and slow it down? Like, why wouldn't you have the green light?
Yeah, that's true. And before we leave, you've been doing great coverage on CBN's YouTube channel of this, and millions of people have tuned in. It's been crazy. But you had an amazing incident that happened right as all of this was going on. Can you explain it real quick?
Yeah, our Middle East bureau chief, Chris Mitchell, who's in Jerusalem, we were talking to him. He was explaining this, and I'm literally asking him, do we know where these, you know, drones and missiles are targeted, where they're going to land? And as I'm saying that, the air siren goes off in the background and he hears an explosion just outside the studio. And he was basically like, well, to answer your question, I guess they're coming here.
I mean, it's amazing these guys are there in the middle of this. Yeah. And I know you guys have done a lot of great coverage over there. So check out their CBN News YouTube channel, because every time something big happens, you're popping on live and you're covering with people who are in the region in the middle of that. CBN's Quick Start podcast as well. They're covering all this stuff. Check it out. Go over and subscribe today. Dan, thanks so much for taking the time.
All right, thanks for having me.
Have you ever wondered just exactly how it is that our politicians enter into public service making moderate salaries and end up like Elon Musk? That's not, what company did they build? I missed all that. Where are all the tens of millions of dollars coming from? While they're busy earning all that money, who's actually doing the job that we sent them there to do in the first place? Go check out the new documentary. It's called Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich. It's available right now on Blaze TV, only if you're a subscriber. You can subscribe at steworiginals.com and use the promo code steworiginals. You'll get $30 off your annual subscription. James Poulos was on the show earlier this week. He's the guy hosting it. And he goes through all of this, how they're making money, how they're benefiting themselves. It's really a scam and a half. So go check that out. Also, check out stewdoesmerch.com. Stewdoesmerch.com. There, if you use the code STEW10, you can save on all sorts of great election merchandise, all sorts of conservative stuff, including these Joe Biden, elderly man with a poor memory, mugs and t-shirts. They're available now. People are like, oh, nice Joe Biden shirt. Oh, you hate him, don't you? Yeah, we do.